face. As he comes closer, I see that his features are frozen with shock. I know this look. I've seen it before. This is the expression of someone who has witnessed something horrific, beyond the bounds of normal human experience. I open the door of the lodge, let him in. He brings with him a rush of freezing air, a spill of snow. "What's happened?" I ask him. There is a moment, a long pause, in which he tries to catch his breath. But his eyes tell the story before he can. A mute communication of horror. Finally, he speaks. "I've found the missing guest." "Well, that's great," I say. "Where?" He shakes his head, and I feel the question expire on my lips. "I found a body."
2. Emma. 3 days earlier, December 30th, 2018. New year. All of us together for the first time in ages. Me and Mark, Miranda and Julian, Nick and Beau, Samira and Giles, their six-month-old baby Priya, and Katie. 4 days in a winter highland wilderness. Loch Corrin, it's called. Very exclusive. They only let 4 parties stay there each year. The rest of the time it's kept as a private residence. This time of year, as you might guess, is the most popular. I had to reserve it pretty much the day after New Year last year, as soon as the bookings opened up. The woman I spoke with assured me that with our group taking over most of the accommodation, we should have the whole place to ourselves. I take the brochure out of my bag again. A thick, card, expensive affair. It shows a fir-lined loch, heather-red peaks rising behind, though they may well be snow-covered now. According to the photographs, the lodge itself, the new lodge, as the brochure describes it, is a big glass construction, uber-modern, designed by a top architect who recently constructed the summer pavilion at the Serpentine Gallery. I think the idea is that it's meant to blend seamlessly with the still waters of the loch, reflecting the landscape and the uncompromising lines of the big peak, the Munro rising behind. Near the lodge, dwarfed by it, you can make out a small cluster of dwellings that look as though they are huddling together to keep warm. These are the cabins. There's one for each couple, but we'll come together to have meals in the shooting lodge, the bigger building in the middle. Apart from the Highland dinner on the first night, a showcase of local seasonal produce will be cooking for ourselves. They've ordered food in for me. I sent a long list in advance. Fresh truffles, foie gras, oysters. I'm planning a real feast for New Year's Eve, which I'm very excited about. I love to cook. Food brings people together, doesn't it? This part of the journey is particularly dramatic. We have the sea on one side of us, and every so often the land shears away so that it feels as if one wrong move might send us careering over the edge. The water is slate grey, violent looking. In one clifftop field, the sheep huddle together in a group as though trying to keep warm. You can hear the wind. Every so often it throws itself against the windows and the train shudders. All of the others seem to have fallen asleep. Even baby Priya. Giles is actually snoring. "Look," I want to say, "look how beautiful it is." I've planned this trip, so I feel a certain ownership of it. The anxiety that people won't enjoy themselves, that things might go wrong. And also a sense of pride already in its small successes. Like this, the wild beauty outside the window. It's hardly a surprise that they're all asleep. We got up so early this morning to catch the train. Miranda looked particularly cross at the hour. And then everyone got on the booze, of course. Mark, Giles and Julian hit the drinks trolley early, somewhere around Doncaster, even though it was only 11. They got happily tipsy, affectionate and loud. The next few seats along did not look impressed. They seem to be able to fall back into the easy camaraderie of years gone by, no matter how much time.